No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions or comments to BBSRADIOPR. Good evening and welcome. Maria and I are going to talk tonight about a lot of relevant issues. Give a shout out to,
as we always do.
As we always do. That's correct. To Representative Castro, from a Democrat from Texas, is from Texas 20 congressional district, who has become the 161st co-sponsor on our House bill. There's rumors out there that we're going to get another one or two co-signers as well. So now we have 161 co-sponsors in the House and 28 in the Senate, the most we've ever had. Thanks so much, Representative Castro. We appreciate your support. We've been talking to Republicans, which I'll discuss with Maria in a minute, last week. But first, let me welcome Maria. Maria, we missed you last week. How was Chicago?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So the Windy City, I don't think I've shared this with you, Michael. I am the good weather fairy, all caps, GWF. And wherever I go, somehow in my biochemistry or whatever, brings in this amazing weather. This week in Chicago was no exception. I mean, July in Chicago, weren't you there moving your daughter?
Yeah.
Or you're going to be there?
Going on Tuesday. I can't believe
okay.
You left.
Yeah, so normally
it's sticky
and oppressive and humid, and it was brilliant and lovely. Now, granted, I had very limited time outside the hotel because of my intensive academic experience, but I made a point to go outside. I Googled, like, best places to eat within, you know, walking distance, and I hit, like, three amazing places. And walked 0.8 miles, and I never perspired once. And it was 6 o'clock at night, and I ate my meal, and they were like, "Oh, I can't believe you landed here." Gibson's one place. It's a legacy. It's like famous. They now have three. So, so that was great. But more importantly, I was there for academic reasons, and there was 3 days of intensive research about quantitative and qualitative analysis. And there were 5 of us students and 7 and 8 professors, which I know will never happen again because my university is getting more famous because we are media psychology. And so this probably will never happen again. And I was, of the 5 students, I had never studied statistics at the PhD level. I studied it at the master's level. And then I had to do this quantitative analysis presentation based on Fox Films and their trailers and 2 feature films that they're launching. So suffice it to say, it was daunting. And my academic professor, who's the one who does this with Fox Films, the first words out of her mouth were brilliant. And I was like, all right.
Okay,
I guess I'm
Maria.
Doing okay. But more importantly for our listeners, I wanted to share with you, Michael. So I got home at midnight on Friday. And so yesterday was, all about details. So I'm in the parking lot of my grocery store and my dry cleaners and my CVS. And so my license plate is Word Gal. And as I was getting into my car, this man who's getting out of his car looks at me and he says, "What's that about?" And I said, "Well, I used to be a spoken word person as a talk radio host. But now I'm studying for my PhD, so I'm doing research, so I'm writing words instead of speaking words." And he says, "You don't have your radio program anymore?" And I said, "Well, I actually do, with a Senator Michael D. Brown from the District of Columbia." And he says to me, "Well, he's not a senator." And I said, "Well, that's the point. Our program is called Shadow Politics. And he's a good guy." And this man next to me, who's in his parked car with the window down, said, "There are no good senators." And I said, "Well, this man is. He doesn't even get reimbursement or a stipend, or he does it out of passion and out of his heart." And they both agreed that you are the anomaly, that you are a good senator, unlike the rest of the senators.
Oh, my God. Well, I've got to run for election in November. Let's get them the absentee vote.
Yeah.
I need those two votes.
Yeah, but they're not in the District of Columbia.
I know. That's great. That's a great story. And
it was amazing, Michael, because everybody has this prurient view of politicians and you senators, but you're the exception. Well,
that's so true, right? I often quote Woody Allen, who once said that politicians were one step lower than child molesters. You know, that's the view a lot of people have of, you know, the sleazy politician. It's one of our big problems, actually, in getting statehood, is that as Washingtonians, they put that onus of, you know, the way they feel about politicians, they put that off on all Washingtonians. You know, like, this is what we all do, right? Like, everybody in Hollywood's an actor, everybody
right.
in Vegas is a gambler, everybody in Washington's a politician. And, you know, we have a definite image problem. But that's a good story to hear. My brother often said to me, the world would be a much better place if none of them got paid, if no member of Congress got paid. And, you know, originally
they didn't
get paid.
Well, you know what this guy in the parking lot said? He said, "Why don't we pay them like we pay car salesmen? If they make a deal that benefits others, they get paid. If they don't, and their legislation is a bomb, then they don't get paid."
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how you would figure that one out, but
well, and I didn't like
it
either. Yeah, but I thought it was proof based instead of just, you know, position based.
Mm-hmm.
But
everything's a success in politics, right? We're all, you know, what's the success has many mothers. We all take credit for everything. So I'm not sure, you know, they'd be constantly wanting to be paid. When Congress was first founded, they didn't even get, congressmen and senators didn't get paid. In fact, they only got paid, I think, when they started to get paid, they got paid a stipend of like $5 a month. Which
right.
seems to me to be a reasonable amount, given what they do sometimes.
Well, so I don't know about you, and I'd love to hear this answer, but in the city that I live in, the city council gets a stipend of, I think it's $400 a month, but they get health insurance if they're there long enough.
Uh-huh.
So I guess that's a good benefit. But the city of Los Angeles, those
uh-huh.
city council members have to quit their jobs and only be a city council member, and they, I think they're the only one in the country that actually gets a salary.
Well, actually, the D.C. council gets $130,000 a year. And
You're kidding.
and it's a part-time job. Some of them make as much as $350,000 a year.
How?
Because it's a part-time job. So
where do we get a part-time job for $350,000?
Well, they get $130,000. Okay, and then one of them was on the board of directors of a company where he made another $200,000. One of them was a partner at a law firm where he made $150,000. So he got $280,000.
So they have others.
And the guy that got $280,000, he took a $50,000 bribe on TV from the FBI. So, you know, is there ever enough money for these guys? Several of the members of the council teach school. They're one of them is a college professor at law professor at George Washington University. So they make lots of money. And actually, the only two that are prohibited from working outside the council are the chairman of the council, and he gets paid $190,000 a year, and the mayor, and she gets paid over $200,000 a year. Yeah.
And is that a rotating position, or are you elected to that?
Chairman? No, you're elected by the people. So it's not like in some councils where you would have elected members of the council and then they would elect a chairman.
Yes.
You know, no, you're actually elected by the people of the District of Columbia. Yeah.
So, Michael, if I may ask, why don't you run for city council and get paid?
I did. I ran twice for city council. The first time I ran for city council, it was to be a PR thing. I wanted to just show that we could have an impact in what we were doing. So I ran a 6-week, no, I'm sorry, I ran a 10-week campaign for chairman after two people had run for a year. 4 weeks before the election, a poll in the Post showed that I was up by 12 points among likely voters. The other guy, who was the incumbent, who had only spent a few thousand dollars up to that point, freaked out and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in the last month of the campaign, calling me a racist. And it was an amazing feat, because he's even whiter than I am. He's the whitest guy I've ever met. And
when was this? What year?
This was 2010. So then again, in 2016 and 2014, I ran again as one of 13 candidates. Now, this was for an at-large position. And at large, we elect two at large city council members every election. So the top two vote getters win. And it's very bizarre because, you know, usually the top vote getter, let's say, gets 90,000 votes, and then the second person gets 35,000 votes, but they also win because they came in second. So out of 13 candidates, I came in third. I spent the least amount of money, and I came in third. And so I came one away from winning. And but I don't want to run for the council anymore. That's a done deal. I hardly spent any money. Some of the people that I beat, one of the people that I beat, became a member of the council a year and a half later. He ran again and won. And I beat him pretty soundly. So I'm pretty good at this. But it takes a lot of money and I'm sorry?
It's about name recognition, usually.
Yeah, that's a big thing that I've got going for me, of course.
Yeah.
I've been in politics a long time in the city. But you know what? It's not just about money for me, Maria. It's not about money. And, you know, when people say that to me all the time, they go, wow, you could get a job at McDonald's and you make more money than doing this. Yeah, but I don't want to work at McDonald's. I took this job because I wanted to accomplish something. You know, I wanted to change something that I thought was wrong in the world, and I still want to do that. And you know, it's not just about making money. The thing we constantly are on the back of the council to pay us. I am, at least, because it gives us credibility, and that's really all I've ever asked for. All I've ever asked for in terms of a salary is $35,000 or $40,000. You know, I'd really like to get $40,000, but only because it gives us credibility. You know, we live in a capitalist society. If they don't pay you to do something, people discount it immediately. You know, and people say it to us all the time. They go, "You're volunteers, aren't you?" "Oh yeah, okay. Well, go sit over there." So that's really what's behind the money for me. I'd like to get paid, and I'd like to have this effort funded. It's just not very well funded. I get $80,000 a year, less than that actually, about $77,000 a year to pay my entire staff. I have two staff people that get paid, to pay all my travel, to pay all my expenses. So every year I have to put in my own money or it wouldn't get done. And, you know, it's a daunting task. Last week, we are up on Capitol Hill talking to Republicans. We've been talking to Republicans
lately.
Yeah,
tell me. How did it go?
Yeah, because we want
to
get a
Republican. Can you speak to whom you chatted with?
Yeah, we want to get a Republican on our statehood bill. We don't have any Republicans, 161. So Puerto Rico.
But you got appointments?
Yeah, yes, we have appointments. We make appointments, yes. And I met with
the
first.
And they granted you access.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Knowing
yeah.
what your agenda is.
Yes. And last week we talked to three Republicans. Now, we talked to Don Young, who's a congressman from Alaska, and we talked to two chiefs of staff because we can get with the members, and we talked to another member from who's the resident commissioner or the congresswoman from Puerto Rico. And what we're trying to do is there's 10 Republicans on the Puerto Rican bill. So we're trying to talk to all 10 Republicans and say to them, look, you're on the Puerto Rico bill, and that's great that you want to make Puerto Rico a state, but you can't leave the District of Columbia out of this deal. The District of Columbia has been, you know, standing in line for 217 years. So we want you to co-sponsor. And one guy from Wisconsin said to us, no way, I'm not the least bit interested. In fact, his top legislative person was rather insulting about it. He said, people in Wisconsin really won't care that rich people in Washington, D.C. are, you know, having their rights violated.
Rich people?
Yeah, because we're all rich.
You've got to roll out your demographics.
Mm-hmm. The guy's never been to, you know, Ward 7 or 8 in our city. But anyway.
Well, no. I mean, poverty is terrible.
Yeah, and parts of our city is horrible. And, you know, he was not very nice to meet with. And then we met with a guy who was the chief of staff for Representative Scott in Virginia, another Republican, and he was very, very sympathetic and very positive, gave us a lot of positive feedback. Congressman Young also gave us some positive feedback. So we have great hope for the future in getting some Republicans on our bill. But, you know, when people want to blow me off, when they want to get rid of me, that's the first thing they say to me. They say to me, "Hey, Mike, you're a volunteer, huh?" And, you know, and I constantly say things like, well, you know, being a volunteer is not so bad. Jesus was a volunteer. Martin Luther King was a volunteer. There's been some great volunteers in the history of the world.
Well, if I may, you should interject words like philanthropist and passionate.
Well, you know,
I mean, 501c3s are filled with volunteers. Why is that?
Yeah, they certainly are. But, you know, again, what does it say to people when the people that have elected you and the people that are supposed to support you don't support you? I mean, you know what I mean?
No, they don't value you economically.
Yeah, and they don't. They don't support us in any way, actually. The council actually works against us very often, and it's horrible.
Part.
It's politics, but you know they treat us the same way Congress treats them, which is, you know, almost ironic. In fact, here's an issue that I want your opinion.
How does Congress have something to do with city council? Why?
Because Congress has exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever of the district, so they control the district.
I understand that, but it boils down to the city council members and how they execute.
You're losing me. What do you mean? What boils down to the city?
So you said that the government has a poor opinion of the District of Columbia because of the city council members?
Yeah.
And I would think that would have more to do with you and your level, not city council. But I'm thinking city council actually executes what the federal government wants.
No, that's not how it works. It works that you can do whatever you want in the District of Columbia. We have home rule. We have an elected city council and elected mayor. So we make all the laws in the district. It's just that Congress has the right to say yay or nay. So when we make a law, when we pass a law, it has to go up on Capitol Hill, and it has to sit for 30 or 60 legislative days, depending on the type of law it is. And they're legislative days, so people understand Congress takes long breaks and vacations, so those days don't count. But they have to sit up there, and then if Congress doesn't do anything, they pass. Okay? So let's say we made a law that marijuana is now legal in the District of Columbia. Recreational marijuana. In fact, it may be the most liberal law in the country. I don't know. But you're allowed to possess 2 ounces of marijuana. This goes up on Capitol Hill. It sits for 30 days. They don't do anything they actually tried to do something at the last minute, but time expired. So it's now the law in the District of Columbia that marijuana is legal. But Congress also said, we're not going to allow you to regulate it. You're not going to be able to tax it. You can't regulate it. You can't do anything with it. So now we're just kind of in this limbo area because we can't legislate because Congress has prohibited it to do anything about it, although they let it happen. And that's the kind of thing that happens to us all the time. Also, Congress could pass a law that marijuana is illegal in the District of Columbia, and then it would be illegal again. So Congress could change it if they wanted to. But that's a difficult process, you know. If they want to change a law in the District of Columbia, what they have to do is they have to get a bill through the House, then they got to get it through the Senate, then they got to have the President sign it, just like another bill. Or they can do there's a thing called a resolution of, you know, I forget the technical name for it, but it's a resolution of we don't like it. And they can put the law on the side burner. But these are difficult things to do. The budget is really easy to do. The budget, only our budget in the District of Columbia and the federal budget needs to be signed by the President of the United States. So our budget needs to go through both houses of Congress. So when it's going through Congress, they just put riders on it. So they have 5 riders on our budget right now. But in the past, they've done things like we had a needle exchange program, and there were members of Congress that didn't like it. And so every year they took the money for the needle exchange program out of the budget, so we could never implement it. There was no way to implement it. We had $0, and we weren't allowed to spend any of our money to do it. They finally rescinded or changed their mind about it when D.C. became the number one place in America for new AIDS cases. So
instead of taking care of it preemptively, they waited until it was a world class problem.
Yes, it was worse for them than, you know,
right?
They didn't want to take it on the chin. So they let us do that, and there's several examples of that. Right now, there are riders on our bill that would get rid of certain health benefits for poor women. I forget what some of the other riders are, but there's 5 of them that we're trying to get off. Eleanor Holmes Norton went on the floor of the Senate. I'm sorry, on the floor of the House on Thursday. and tried to get the riders off, but she couldn't get any of the riders off. They kept all five of them on. So we'll see. She's vowed to keep on fighting.
Can you speak to what the riders are? Because I'm sure they're pork belly, right?
No, they're not pork belly. They're things that people don't like the one that I just mentioned to you is we want to use our own local money to fund abortions for poor women. It doesn't amount to very much money, to tell you the truth. It only amounts to, you know, $100,000, $200,000 a year in a $14.5 billion budget. And there's a federal law that prohibits using taxpayer money to do that, but localities are allowed to use their own money to do it. There's no, I'm sure they do it in California. There's no jurisdiction, excuse me, that's prohibited from using its own money to do it, except the District of Columbia. It's actually, this is the issue I'm most familiar with because it's the issue that I went to jail over. But, you know, that's the type of issue they are. They're issues, very often they're gun issues. They're things that people want to make political statements about, but they can't make political statements in their own jurisdictions about them. So take a gun law, for example. This is a great example. If you're in Texas or Alabama or Florida, you have pretty liberal gun laws. So one of the riders is from Senator Rubio. There's another rider that was on a bill from Senator Rubio where he wants to mess with our gun laws because he wants to get a good rating from the NRA. And the NRA, he can't do anything in Florida. They already have liberal gun laws. So he attacks the district, which has pretty strict gun laws. And that kind of stuff happens all the time. So it's not really pork belly things. It's not really things that you might say, well, you know, Congress is keeping an eye on the district. No, it's things that fall into their political agenda that they want to make a statement about. And that's the thing with marijuana. You know, they want to make a statement about it. There are several members of Congress that don't approve of the whole marijuana thing, and so they're going to interfere with it, even though it's not in their state. And that's one of the things we have a problem with. There's a movement in District Columbia called Hands Off D.C., and that's the idea behind it, is that, you know, you should let us live like everybody else lives, not only give
like
us our
adults,
rights, but
that are intelligent and articulate and care about their constituency.
Yes, I mean.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we've discussed this before. You're treated like children, that you don't know what you're doing, and you need Papa Bear to watch over you and sign off on this.
You want to know that the ironic thing, which is really starting to get to me, is that we complain about this because it's so un-American. But then our council turns around and acts exactly the same way. Here's an issue that I want to talk to you about tonight, and that is Initiative 77. We put an initiative on the ballot to raise the minimum wage for servers in the District of Columbia to $15 an hour by 2022. Servers were against it. There already is a law on the books that says if you're a server and you don't make enough money from your tips, we have the restaurant has to pay you minimum wage. But this law is different in that it mandates a minimum wage. They expect labor costs to go up, tips to go down. Everybody that was a server that I ever talked to was against this law. I voted against the law. But guess what? The law passed. The law passed on a referendum, and now the city council has decided, seven of them, that they're going to overturn the law. So here I am. I'm up on Capitol Hill, and I'm saying to senators and congressmen, you can't ignore the will of the voters of the District of Columbia. That's undemocratic. And what does our city council do? They immediately ignore wishes of the voters on the city council. I mean, of the voters and want to overturn something because they don't like the outcome. They're saying things like there was a, you know what, not very many people voted. Only 17% of the district voted. So that's really not a mandate. But you know the lovely thing? Not one of them who was elected as the Democratic candidate, I was elected as a Democratic candidate in the Democratic primary, not one of them is saying, well, let's overturn my election.
Right.
You know, if only three people voted, but they all voted for me, that's fine.
Right.
But if three people voted for something I didn't like, not enough people voted. And that really bothers me. It really bothers me. Meanwhile, two Republicans on Capitol Hill have done the same thing. They've gotten involved, and they want to overturn Initiative 77. So here is another conundrum for the council. Now the council is siding with the people that interfere with them when they're usually fighting or almost exclusively fighting with them not to interfere. Now they find themselves on the same side. And I just don't get it. I don't get why there's not a standard that we go by. If you put a referendum on the ballot, I'm sorry not enough people showed up. And I'm sorry my side lost. I voted against it. But the people have spoken. You can't ignore that. So this really brings me to our bigger topic, which I really want to talk to you about. You and I have tried recently to get the civility lady back on the show,
yes,
and I hope we'll do that soon. But, you know, this is really starting to bother me. In Washington this week, and I want to know your impression on this, Washington this week, there's a case to revoke the liquor license for the Trump Hotel, and it's on the basis that to have a liquor license in Washington, D.C., you must be of good character, and they're arguing that the President of the United States is not of good character, so he should lose his liquor license. And look, there's not just a handful of people doing this in court. On the Washington Post editorial page on Saturday, the head of the editorial board wrote an article saying we should take away his liquor license. Now, do we really, is this how we deal with the President of the United States? We don't have bigger fish to fry. There's not a bigger issue here. Why are people doing this? They're doing it just to get at them. And I don't get it. You know what I mean? It's like...
Michael, that's the whole reason that you and I get along so brilliantly. Because you and I are colorblind when it comes to politics. But
well,
I
you know,
when,
I mean, I'm
when
sure I have
elected,
my prejudices.
Well,
but,
yeah, I know that, and you're a super delegate, and you voted for Hillary Clinton, and all that stuff. But Michael, didn't he have to divest himself of that all of those holdings when he became president?
You know what? That doesn't even matter to me. He probably
legality is.
Yeah, what the legality of the whole thing is. But look, it's obvious. Do we really think that the President of the United States really has anything to do with that liquor license other than the fact that it's in his name? This is just something to get at him. Nobody thinks that – nobody's standing up saying, I'm sure, President Trump's going to let 16-year-olds drink in his hotel. You know, nobody's accusing him of doing anything that would be a liquor violation. They're just trying to get at him. It's like your neighbor doesn't like you, so he's having your car towed because it's in front of his house. And you know what I mean? And here's another thing. I just got an email. I'm on MoveOn.org, and I just got an email from Representative Jaipal, from Washington's 7th District. Her last name's pronounced Jaypal. And she sent me an email with the tagline that said, electing these two women will drive Trump crazy. She wants me to give her money and sign a petition to elect two Muslim women because it'll drive the president crazy. is this really the approach we want to take? We don't want to elect people because they're going to do a good job. We don't want to elect people because they're the right people. We want to elect people to be mean to the president. Is that real?
Well, Michael, it speaks to a conversation that we had over a year ago about the Democrats keep saying resist, and you are like, well, what's substantive about that?
Right, because resistance doesn't get you anywhere. The best you can do with resistance is stay in the same place. You can't move. It doesn't move you forward.
What do we stand for?
Yeah, and I don't know what we do to move politics beyond this gridlock. Now the gridlock has spilled over from Congress to everywhere in America, as far as I see it. You know, the incident at the Red Hen restaurant. I'm sure you're familiar with this. It's, you know,
yeah.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders was refused service at a restaurant. Now, look, this is my opinion. We had a lady, not a particularly nice lady, but we had a lady on the show to talk of, and one of the issues that came up was the baker in Utah that didn't want to bake the cake. Well, look, if we're telling a baker that he's got to bake a cake for a gay couple, which I think we we have every right to do that. It's a public place. How can we then refuse service, stand behind refusing service to somebody because we don't like their politics? You know?
Well, hasn't the Supreme Court upheld the lower court Colorado decision?
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
So,
and Sarah Huckabee Sanders was one of the people that stood up for the baker, so I don't feel sorry for her. But I do want to say, how can we apply a different standard as liberals? We're applying one standard to the baker who we feel a kinship with and not to Sarah Huckabee, who we don't like. I mean, I don't get it.
So here's the question. Is it because restaurants post that sign that says we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone?
Well, first of all, this is something I learned very long ago from my sister, the lawyer. You can put up any damn sign you want. Signs are totally irrelevant. The law is what counts. So if you go into a parking lot, if you go into a parking lot and it says we're not responsible for damage to your car, and your car gets damaged, and the law is that they have to take reasonable care and looking for your car, and they didn't. They're responsible. It doesn't matter that they put up a sign that said that they're not responsible. And, you know, and again, if we, maybe she had a right, maybe she had a legal right to do that. But do they really have a moral right if we're going to stand behind the baker and say, look, we don't care how you feel about gay people. These people are customers and they need to be treated under the law like all customers. We should be saying that to the restaurant, too, shouldn't we? Shouldn't we be saying, these people are customers. You don't like their politics? Great. Don't talk politics with them. You know, if they get out of hand, ask them to leave. But if they're there and they're orderly and they're acting like every other customer, I think you got to serve them.
I really do. I do, too.
And I wonder what's happened.
It's a really good comparison, though, between the baker and the restaurant.
Yeah, and
because
you know, it just seems like
business, private.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to talk over you, but this just seems like revenge politics to me. Is the new, we're going to take away his liquor license? Why? Because we can. You know, what sense does that make? And to have the Washington Post stand behind it. Like, you know, like, yeah, they're doing exactly the right thing. You know, he's of low moral character, and that's incredible.
And speaking of the Washington Post,
yeah.
Michael, how, I know that you've had so many letters in the op-ed, right? And you've had so many articles written about you. In fact, I recently somewhat unflattering and untrue. So one of my idols in life, which is why I named my daughter, is Katherine Graham.
Oh, yeah.
And what she did to make them relevant and to make them pertinent and to make them worldwide and renowned, you must have been really, really were you in awe when that was all going down? Because you lived it. You were there.
No, I mean, you know, I was wrapped up in other things. It really wasn't my world. My world was national politics. I really didn't get involved in local stuff. My world
was. Yeah, but she
was,
made it. She got it national with the.
Oh, no, she did. And, you know, and certainly as somebody that worked at the Democratic National Committee just and started working just a couple of years after the Watergate thing, yeah, we were in awe of all that stuff, you know, but I was focused in those days on getting people elected, not really on policy and other things, more on how to get, you know, how to work at a national level to get people elected. And I started my own business, you know, and I ran my own business for 25 years. And one of my friends used to call it anything for a dollar because I did so many different things. And, you know, that's how small business is, you know. In politics, I did so many different things from helping put on events to doing direct mail, to doing PR stuff for people, to actually working on campaigns, to, you know, so I was really focused on that stuff. But yeah, Katharine Graham has always been a hero, yeah, for
but
what
the
she
Washington
did.
Post still has an effect on your life.
Yes, it does. And you know what? It bothers me that, I mean, I think, I learned this very long ago in politics, that people are the same, basically. That the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have different agendas and they have different ideas, but the quality of people in both parties is pretty much the same. In other words, there are wonderful people in the Democratic Party and also in the Republican Party. And there are people that are terrible in both parties. And, you know, and really what you need to focus on is the policies and what's getting done and not the individual necessarily. And, you know, and that's what I dislike about revenge politics. It's all about getting at the people and not getting at the policies. I hope we can find a way around that. I mean, the liquor license for me is just the perfect example. It's so trivial. The man is the president of the United States. I do not like him. I will vote against him. I will work for his opponent. But I don't give a damn about his liquor license. You know, there's bigger things.
Yeah. Well, because you've got your head up and your eyes forward instead of being trivial.
You know what's next? Are we going to start writing nasty things about his wife and his child? I mean, you know what's next? What's the next?
Well, did you not see Donald Trump Jr.? His girlfriend just got fired from Fox.
She got fired from where?
From Fox.
Oh, from Fox. That's another thing. I mean, that's another thing. I mean,
by
you know,
her assignation with him, she lost her job.
Yeah, of you know, and you know, and it goes, you know, it's not just about the politicians. It's not just about Trump and you know, people that like him and don't like him. You look at the senator from Minnesota, Al Franken. Now, he's a guy that lost a job. I really never understood that. You know, I understood the thing he did with the woman, but he's a comedian. He was a comedian at the time, and he's trying to be funny, and he didn't touch her, and it wasn't funny, maybe, but maybe he made a bad joke. But as soon as they brought it up, he left. You know,
well, guess what? There was a director that was fired in the last 2 days from a feature film because of tweets that he made 10 years ago.
Yeah, there you go. Are we getting to the point where
I think it was
we're not going to be able to move forward to, you know. And look,
well, what I'm studying, Michael, it's our carbon footprint, if you will. It's called expo. It's called Our Digital Traces. And what we have done on social media follows us, or now they're calling it your digital shadow.
Yeah.
And so this guy got fired for things that he said 10 years ago. And he
well, believe me, Mrs. Brown,
for it.
Mrs. Brown, who's a librarian, spends a lot of her time lecturing kids about what they put on the internet that is there for always. And, you know, not just to put stuff up there without thinking about it, because 20 years from now it can come back and get you.
Well,
and you know what?
With all due respect, you might tell Mrs. Brown that their prefrontal cortex has not finished forming, so they're not going to get it until they're 26.
Oh, my God. Nobody needs to tell Mrs. Brown that their prefrontal cortex hasn't developed. She lives it. You know, she spends her days. In fact,
so
she's just
I'm glad
to
be sharing it, but it's not going to have an impact.
She's just moved up from middle school librarian. She starts in a couple of weeks as the head librarian at a high school. So she'll be dealing
You're
with
kidding.
A little older,
oh,
yeah,
a little
older
more
crowd.
Sophisticated.
So that's good. But yeah, I just don't get how we move forward.
Shout out to Mrs. Brown.
Huh?
Shout out to Mrs. Brown.
Yeah, shout out to Mrs. Brown, who's a loyal
She's
listener.
She's such a lovely woman. You so
and that's why I'm
up.
Always so nice to her on the air, because she listens
well,
every
you
week.
Married up.
I did marry up, but you know what? I don't know a man that didn't. I don't have a friend that didn't. You know, I've
wow,
got lots of married friends, and every one of them is certainly not the better half of their
wow.
union.
Wow. That's a big statement.
Oh, my God. Yeah, women are so much better than men. Come on. You know that. We act like it's a big secret, you know, because we feel like
well,
we're
Well, we women know that. I didn't know you men knew that.
Well, some of us do. The smart ones do. You know, yeah. I mean, yeah. The all those things that are the best of humanity reside more in women than they do in men. I mean, there are a lot of great men in the world, don't get me wrong, but you understand that.
How come we always quote Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill, Mark Twain, John Kennedy, Vince Lombardi, Martin Luther King? How many women do
we
quote?
Because we get to do this stuff. You know?
But how many women do we quote?
Well, right.
Nelson Mandela.
Well,
I mean, no. I can't think of a woman that we quote. I know famous women who, you know, Marie Curie and Rosa Parks and the woman who founded the American Red Cross.
Oh, I quote women all the time. I quote women like Fannie Lou Hamer, who said, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired." I use that quote all the time, but you're right. You know, they don't call it history for nothing, right? We wrote it.
Right.
And you know, those are the people that are remember. I'm sure that Abigail Adams had many incredible things to say, but nobody wrote them down. They were busy listening to what John had to say, you know.
Yeah, they weren't.
Or Martha Washington, or, you know. And actually, the quote that I wanted
Wait,
to use
Eleanor
tonight,
Roosevelt, we do quote.
Yes, Eleanor Roosevelt. And I wanted to quote, and it's funny that you bring it up, because I've got it written down right here under the civility talk, what happened to Michelle Obama. You know, because Michelle Obama said, when they go low, we go high. What happened
right.
to that idea that when people go low, we should go high? You know, there's another quote I use all the time. So we, you know, but certainly, you know, women have certainly been in the background for the past several
well,
thousand
keyword
years
background.
When it comes to quotes and things like that. But, you know, which one of us doesn't have great respect for their mother? I mean, you know, women are really the backbone of civilization, in my humble opinion. Well, we're almost out of time, Maria. So, you got anything else to say? I've monopolized a lot of the conversation. Go ahead.
No, you haven't. No, because you're such a wise and progressive and feminist. man.
Well,
who has
Mrs. Brown says
three...
I'm a theoretical feminist.
Oh, I disagree. And she is teasing you. I know that. I've met her. She's got a wicked sense of humor.
She does.
And so I think our greatest legacy is our children, and I'm really super proud of my four, and I know you're proud of your three. And I think it's because we're able to see both sides of the equation, and we're not polarizing. We are about compromising. And
yeah.
Our listeners, too, that they have lots of choices out there, and that they choose to make us one of their priorities, I'm exceedingly grateful for. Because, you know, there's a lot of white noise out there. And
that's
so
right.
That they find us and that they care about us and that they listen and they download and they share, that means a lot.
Well, you know, I wanted to say today, there's a line from a Bob Dylan song, a favorite Bob Dylan song that I like, and it says, I have nothing but affection for those who sailed with me. And I think when you think about it, you know, all the people, if you look around at all the people that have gone through your life with you, not only the people that are close to you, like your family, but also your neighbors and your people in your community and your mailman and the cops in the neighborhood and the people that run the local grocery store. When you think of all the people that go through life with you, isn't that something that we would all say? We have nothing, in the end, we have nothing but affection for these people because we all went through this together. So
yeah.
I don't know why we forget that. And I hope that in the future we start to remember that we're all in this together. This is about
yeah.
all of us. It's not about any one of us. It's about us as a nation. It's about us as a people. I want to leave you tonight with a song by a local boy here in Washington who we love, Nels Lofgren, who actually plays with Bruce Springsteen, but he was a local guy, that kid that wrote, we all listened to here when I was a teenager in Washington, and he did a song entitled We All Sing Together. And that's what I want to leave the audience with tonight, that idea that we all sing together, and we have to harmonize, because if we don't, all it is cacophonous noise. So we'll see you next week, America. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much, Maria Sanchez.
Yes, Senator Michael D. Brown.
Well, I'll talk next week. Thanks, folks. Thanks for listening.
Give the people their right to vote.